Welcome to another episode of Conduct Detrimental. Dan Lust joined this week by Zach Xavier Bryson. What's up, Zach? You kind of, if I have to say anything, you kind of have the Clark Kent look going. I don't know about Xavier, like Professor Xavier. It's like Clark Kent for sure.
Well, that Dan, that ties in perfectly with the middle name of Steelman. So I'm the Man of Steel, Clark Kent.
I always forget that your real middle name is Steelman.
Real middle name. It is not fake, not made up. My grandmother's maiden name. It's a real thing.
That's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. I think that's cooler than Lust, that your middle name is Steelman. That's pretty sweet. Okay, so we got somewhat of an abbreviated episode this week. We're going to talk about Reggie Bush. We're going to talk about the Federal Trade Commission's lifting of the non-compete language. We'll talk about that. I have some thoughts on that. Always be careful on the podcast because of who I represent, not to take too hard of a position going one way or the other. But I think my position is fair. I thought it through and I think it's safe for radio, so to speak. And then Zach, today is somewhat of a holiday. It is National Football League Draft Day, NFL Draft Day. I have a lot of action tonight. I have a lot of thoughts on the draft. Before we get started, a happy belated Passover to those who celebrate. I'm in the middle of not eating any bread, and it's very tough, Zach. It's very tough. It's very tough to eat matzah.
I can't personally relate, but that's because I love bread so much. I have it just about every day. I had it for definitely had it for lunch today, so definitely can understand how that's a major struggle.
Yeah, way to rub it in. Way to rub it in. I'm just eating like pieces of cracker all day. It's fantastic. It's amazing. Okay, so we'll get right into it. Let's start, Zach, with the NFL draft. There's a lot of noise about Caleb Williams not having an agent. There's always going to be the stories. You can name it about players falling in the draft because of legal concerns. I think as we start this, and I like our Thursday and Friday episodes, you know, just kind of reflect on the week that was. I have been diving very deep into the NFL draft, Zach. Do you how deep are you into the draft? There's a legal question and a gambling question I have, but let me get your level of expertise on the draft before I divulge.
Yeah, I definitely follow it surface level. I'm most of my draft involvement comes after the picks come out, and I sit down and say, okay, well, how's the 49ers done? How have their opponents done? And actually see the picks, but the front side of the planning and the picking, Dan, I feel like that's definitely more your wheelhouse.
It is odd that you live in Carolina and are not a Panthers fan and you root for the 49ers. That seems suspicious, very sus, as the kids say.
It does seem a little suspicious, especially, you know, being from North Carolina and living here my whole life. But one, they suck. They stink. And
that's,
two,
that's what I was saying, Zach. You got to stick with your hometown teams, suck it or not.
I could, but – you know, my dad's been a fan of the 49ers since he was young, whenever it was Joe Montana and Jerry Rice. So I kind of inherited that from him, even though I'm from North Carolina, chose the team most geographically isolated from me. But to me, that's my hometown team. And the Panthers, Tepper can do whatever he wants.
Well, you and I have that in common. My dad is a San Francisco Giants fan. So I totally get that. But I always have the cop-out of that they were in New York for a period of time and then they left. So I think I said a couple of weeks in the podcast that if the San Francisco Giants hit their win total for the year, we'll do some type of giveaway. They've been pretty good as of late. Okay, so here's at least what I want people to be aware of. We're in a weird world where these betting controversies are popping up everywhere. At last year's NBA draft, where there was a whole story about Sham Sharania, we covered it on the podcast about a year ago, give or take, whenever the last NBA draft was. Sham Sharania tweeted out something along the lines of, and I don't have the quote tweet in front of me, but that Scoot Henderson was going to be the second pick in the NBA draft. And when someone like Sham Sharania, and for those that don't know Shams, he's like the Woj of NBA, the Schefter of NBA. He's one of these really main beat reporters. When he tweets something, the line moves a lot. There have never been any lawsuits, never been any discipline, as far as I can tell, of somebody tweeting inaccurate information. But when Shams tweeted that last year, the pick at number two was not Scoot Henderson, who ended up going to the Trailblazers at three. It was Brandon Miller, who went to the Charlotte Hornets. And, safe to say thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars were wagered on the NBA draft that night. And a large chunk, I don't know how much what the percentages were, but a large percentage was altered by what Sham said. And that was indicative of the line moving exponentially. Let's say it moved 3 or 4x. So, Zach, as we sit here on Thursday, something similar happened yesterday. I don't know if it's going to be right. I don't know if it's going to be wrong, but something happened. And now your boy, Dan Lust, might be a potential class action plaintiff in what has transpired. Are you ready for this, Zach?
I'm very ready, Dan.
I'm only like half kidding, but I'm just like, I watch this. There's a player, Alabama offensive tackle guy by the name of J.C. Latham. And he was, he's always been on the fringe of top 10. And, I don't know. These mock drafts don't really mean anything. But last night, and then I'm recording this on Thursday, people will hear this on Friday. They'll see if I did well or if I'm going to be an aggrieved potential class action plaintiff. But last night, the three main mock drafts came out. Peter Schrager's mock draft came out with the NFL Network, Field Yates with ESPN, and Daniel Jeremiah. I think he's also with the NFL Network. But like, those are the three main mocks other than Kuiper, who's, Kuiper's in a different world at this point. And all three, very suspiciously, never happened before. Never at this point in the draft had happened, but all three of them said J.C. Latham is going to the Chargers at number five. And these guys, and seemingly have independent mock drafts. All the other picks are different. Or not all the picks, most of the other picks are different. But that all happened on the same day. So what do I do? And I've talked about my I'm a very kind of odd bettor. I generally deal in arbitrage. Like if something happens in the news that impacts a betting line, if I can get an advantage on it, I will run to it. So that happened very suspiciously. Not one, not two, not three. Sorry, all of them moved there. So your boy has a lot of bets on J.C. Latham, top five, top 10. I'm hoping that the three of them weren't all getting misinformation, but they clearly were getting information from somebody, and that information dramatically moved the lines. For reference, yesterday, before those mock drafts went out, J.C. Latham to be the fifth overall pick was 28-1 on a fun site called DraftKings. That same line is now about 1.5-1. So the line moved 28x. I don't know. The information comes out. I don't think there's any cause of action against. I'm just half joking about being a class action plaintiff. But someone was feeding information to someone very similar as to how it happened with Sham Sharani last year. And I'm just flagging for our listeners and those that are looking for interesting topics to write about. The inside culture of Twitter dramatically moves these lines. And if we're worried about Jontay Porters of the world and we're worried about Shohei Ohtani, the insiders tweeting out these mock drafts moves the line just as much. And if they're wrong, what are the ramifications? So, Zach, I leave that with you. Let's see. Let's see if I win a lot of money here. I have nothing to complain about. These guys were all right. But they all got the information seemingly from somewhere. And if they're wrong, that's when people start asking questions.
It's really interesting to see how those lines move pretty substantially whenever something like that happens. And it seems like, you kind of alluded to a little bit there, Dan. It happens almost, if not every year, with a lot of frequency, and what feels like more frequency as we get more and more states, legalizing sports betting and things of that nature. The odds are going to have the get all of that information and try to make the best line they can. Whenever it moves substantially like that, it's always eyebrow raising. And so, you could end up being a class action plaintiff. You could end up winning a lot of money. Either way, it'll be interesting, and I'm sure we'll continue to hear about it here on the podcast.
Yeah, I just, I'm joking about suing anyone. I'm not going to sue anybody. But the fact that someone's tweet or someone's mock draft can so dramatically move a line, we have so much power in these insiders. And, it's not really a regulated market by any means. We're not going to cover the SBF developments. I have a client that is somewhat wrapped in that. So I got to be quiet on that. But that's securities, that's a regulated marketplace. Trading of crypto is somewhat of a regulated marketplace, and I know there's shades of gray in that, and there's the Bored Ape lawsuit. My firm has some clients that are close to that as well, so I can't really comment on either of those. But the business of tweeting information to move lines like that, there's no issue with that. But obviously we all agree that Jontay Porter providing inside information to bettors, that's bad, both of which move lines, but one is not regulated at all and the other one is. So Just, you know, maybe 2 years from now when we're still doing the podcast, we're alive, kicking, and doing well. I'll be like, remember that podcast I did 2 years ago, Zach? And you'll be like, yeah, Dan, you called it. And then we'll timestamp it, we'll put it out, we'll clip it, and people see it. But I just pointed out. So we'll see. JC Latham, number 5 overall, JC Latham, top 10. That's it. Let's see if that works. Okay. Zach, sticking with football for a second. The reigning Heisman Trophy Award winner, Jaden Daniels, is supposed to go second in this draft. Zach, you gave me an interesting take, is really why I wanted to cover Reggie Bush. Reggie Bush is in the news this week. The man is getting back his Heisman Trophy. Apparently, there was a lawyer in California. We're not going to give the lawyer's not a sponsor of the show, and I don't know him personally, so I'm not going to give him a shout. But a lawyer allegedly met Reggie Bush at Rob Gronkowski's pool party in California. This is not a fake story. This is according to TMZ. And they, this guy was big into USC and basically said, I want to help you get your Heisman back. So between this random lawyer, I guess negotiating with the Heisman Trust, Johnny Manziel's campaign, you know, Johnny Manziel was very adamant on Shannon Sharpe's show. I guess it was a couple months ago at this point. He's got to get his Heisman back. And obviously the changes of the guard with respect to NIL, everything is kind of pointed that Reggie might get this back. But that's the news. Right before the NFL draft, Reggie Bush posing with his Heisman Trophy from 2005 that never should have been taken away. Now, Zach, you know I teach my class at the end of each semester, both at Pace and New York Law School. I ask students to do presentations on some current events, some older events, but they're some form of oral argument, some form of negotiation. It doesn't really matter. I had topics. Two students or groups of students in each class pick the Reggie Bush defamation case is something that they wanted to advocate for. And so this was very timely. I actually pinged one of my students, and if they're listening to this, they'll know. Timestamp. I tried to get him on the podcast this week, but a short notice. Reggie Bush is embroiled in a topic that we've covered before, in a very big defamation case against the NCAA. Zach, I had asked you to load up that statement, the subject defamatory statement that Reggie Bush is suing over. I have some thoughts. I think the return of his Heisman will actually probably hurt the NCAA's case here, probably. But Zach, let's dive into the defamation case. I think you and I might disagree on this. So let's spend some time talking about this defamation case, and I'll mention my thoughts on the impact of it. But Zach, go ahead. For those that are unfamiliar, what is the alleged statement from the NCAA that Reggie Bush is presently suing over?
Yeah, so the alleged statement occurred on July 28th, 2021. So more recent than the initial allegations in 2005, 2006. But it was during Reggie's campaign to get the Heisman back. There was a statement that said, quote, "Although college athletes can now receive benefits from their name, image, and likeness through activities like endorsements and appearances, NCAA rules still do not permit pay-for-play type arrangements," end quote. So the issue there was the pay for play type arrangements is what they're claiming was completely false.
Okay, so the pay for play type arrangements, the individual that made this comment has been working for the NCAA. My understanding, this is one of my students' presentations and verified by me online at some point, but I don't have it in front of me. That statement, the pay for play arrangements, there was an investigation years ago where it was actually determined, well, we'll say allegedly, reportedly, that there was not actually pay for play and that the NCAA looked into this as part of a USC investigation. That there was really no pay for play involved, but that notwithstanding, Reggie Bush still lost his Heisman Trophy. So, question is, assuming that to be the case, if the NCAA knows that there was no pay for play and they know that there was no violations following investigation, assuming that to be the case, whether someone's comment that worked for the NCAA, right, and this is a case that was 15 years prior, if someone says, you know, Zach, what's the statement again? Read it to me. There was one, the last part of the sentence, the most important part.
See the last part. Quote, "NCAA rules still do not permit pay for play type arrangements."
Okay, so let's just say hypothetically that the NCAA found that there was no pay-for-play type arrangement. And then 16 years later, an employee of the NCAA says, alludes to the fact that this was a pay-for-play arrangement. That is an assertion of fact, right? You know, we could talk about actual malice and all that stuff. Let's say for purpose of this hypothetical, which just because I don't have it in front of me, I believe this the individual that made this comment was employed by the NCAA at the time of the investigation, which allegedly cleared Reggie Bush, as well as making this statement. So this is someone that would know the results of that investigation, and basically, you know, might or might not have some knowledge. So, Zach, you texted me something along the lines of like, "Does Reggie Bush have any shot?" I want you to make the case for the NCAA, which I think is what you're inclined to do. I'll make the case for Reggie Bush, and we'll see how it plays out. But go ahead, you first. You have the mic.
Yeah, whenever it's presented in, in the way that you were characterizing there, it does seem like a strong thing for Reggie Bush. But at the same time, there can be, there's two sides to every coin. And the thing that kept catching my eye as I read these articles is Reggie and all of his statements, even whenever he was getting his Heisman back and around that, was about being called a cheater and branded a cheater for cheating. And if you're the NCAA, well, you can argue that there was some sort of cheating. I mean, it may not have been necessarily pay for play. You also didn't say in this the statement that supposedly sparked the lawsuit, you don't even say cheating, you just say pay for play. There's definitely some stuff to all of that. And then you have to know that it's false, which you kind of alluded to. She might if she was around at the time. And then there has to be, because he's a public figure, you've got to have actual malice also. So was she doing this to be, malicious towards Reggie Bush, or was she just saying this, having the position that the NCAA's had and not really meaning it in a malicious way? And it's been kind of taken in a more malicious way. There's, a lot of leeway there. And I think, with as much as Reggie keeps saying the word cheating and variations thereof, I think he's going to really try and argue the definition of cheating, includes this sort of stuff, and it's what the image that's kind of conjured up by the statement and pay for play and everything. And the NCAA can say, well, based on that definition, what we did really isn't exactly like that. I don't know. Who knows? There's definitely merit to what Reggie's saying, especially with the investigation that said there was no pay for play type stuff. There may have been other things, but there was no pay for play stuff. So, how it falls as to whether that was just like a careless slip up as pay for play or
Well,
actually malicious would be important.
so, there is a very big divide of what pay for play is versus what NIL is, or name, image, and likeness deals. Pay for play is something akin to a salary, right? Or some type of compensation exchange for playing games. That's, not what I believe happened with Reggie Bush. I believe, again, my understanding, that's not what the NCAA investigation revealed. So pay for play is still not permitted in the NCAA. You can't do that. You can give people marketing deals and different stuff, and give people compensation for being associated with a program, but not pay them for actually playing games. Now, my students and you, of course, Zach, and the listeners of the podcast are well aware that those are two different things: pay for play and NIL. But when the NCAA makes a statement on July 28th of 2021, 3 weeks after the start of the NIL era, maybe she could claim it was harmless, or I didn't really know the difference in NIL and pay for play. I don't know. That's her job. Her job is to, with the NCAA, right? She's not like the McDonald's drive-through attendant who probably doesn't know the difference between NIL and pay for play, or my daughter's a kindergarten teacher. I'm like, she doesn't know the difference of that. But if you work for the NCAA and we're 3 weeks into the NIL era, I'm going to assume that you know the difference between NIL and pay for play. This concept of actual malice, as we've talked about in the pod over the years, is really given to someone that knows what they're saying is false, but they say it anyway. Because they're being malicious. I think that's, no, I don't know if that's the case here, but the parameters seem to be somewhat in place for Reggie Bush to make that comment. That's why he is not afraid to go after her. And I say it, it's good, it's bad. We haven't covered Trevor Bauer's new stuff. We'll probably cover it at some point. But I if people are wrongfully accused of something, that's what defamations exist for. Defamation lawsuits exist for. So I respect Reggie Bush for doing it. I think it's a an interesting case. We'll see if it was really done with actual malice, but I think it checks all the other boxes in terms of it being a false assertion of material fact that has caused some type of harm. They're going to say it didn't cause harm, but I disagree with that. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. But I did want to point, the reason we're bringing this case up, it's a case that was filed a couple months ago. I wanted to point out the Heisman Trust that is giving Reggie his trophy back. They obviously have an affiliation with the NCAA. It's a separate body. I've met one of the trustees on the Heisman Trust. They operate differently. Obviously, I think they have to work in tandem with one another, but certainly the decision to take away Reggie Bush's Heisman trophy was related to that initial investigation of this paid for play or whatever NCAA alleged to have happened, the Heisman giving him his trophy back really does send a signal that, hey, maybe the guy didn't do anything wrong. So yeah, it's somewhat of a technical case. I don't expect Reggie Bush to drop the case. I think he settled his differences with the Heisman Trust. That by no means means that he settled his differences with the NCAA. Again, those are two different bodies. So I wanted to make sure people knew that this defamation case is not necessarily going away here.
Yeah, definitely not going away. And I definitely think you're right, Dan, with respect to the fact that he's got a leg to stand on, especially now that the Heisman Trust has, returned that trophy to him. It's definitely fun to play some good cop, bad cop, being on both sides of the issues. But that definitely is a not a fatal strike to the NCAA's, kind of pushback there, but it's definitely a blow. And it'll be interesting to see how far it goes if it keeps going. I think the NCAA has to settle it, Dan. I think they kind of have to stop a full investigation if it continues to go on. And I think that it's clear that Reggie's going to continue to push. I think that might be the resolution. I don't know, but if I was going to put some money on it, if there was a way to have a line on that, Dan, I think I'd be putting money on a settlement here.
Yeah, I don't this I think it might have accomplished its goal already. So in terms of a settlement, you might be right. But Reggie Bush and the weakness in the case, I think it will be fine. But what damages has Reggie Bush had by a statement from the NCAA in 2020, July 28th of 2021? So you have to prove reputational harm from that point forward. Reggie Bush's career, his playing career is long over. Does it harm his broadcasting career? Reggie Bush obviously is involved with, various football broadcasts even now. He could make that argument. I'm not sure that to be the case. I think people are kind of over with it. But the fact that Reggie got his Heisman trophy back, that's the big thing that people say that Reggie lost and maybe wins being vacated from USC. I assume that to be the case, but I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, we'll see what comes of it. But yeah, I'm not necessarily saying this case is done. Okay, Zach, while we have about a few minutes left, let's do. By the way, a reminder, podcast sponsored by Themis Bar Review. Good reminder, Zach. Zach, you studying for the bar right now? Oh, you're done. You're done with the
I'm
bar. You
done.
passed the bar.
I'm done. Pass the bar.
Yeah, we talked about
Getting
this.
sworn in next week, Dan.
That's awesome. Take some pictures. Shout out to Themis Bar Review. I remember when you posted on your LinkedIn like 2 weeks ago, you're like, thank you to Dan Lust for being great. I'm like, Zach, I had no involvement of anything. You were just a rock star. You don't need to tag me in those posts, but I appreciate it. But you are the man, Zach. Anyone that passes the bar, it's such an incredible accomplishment. But you can thank your significant other. You can thank your parents, your significant other who shall not be named on the podcast, correct?
According to her will, yes.
Yeah, I remember at one point, listen, we're not gonna say anything. We're not gonna say any names. You can't cut this out of the podcast. At one point, we had the conversation on the podcast about your significant other. And when I went to listen to that episode of the podcast, I said, Zach, make any cuts you want. It's totally up to you. That entire segment was out. So I'm like, that was odd. We didn't really say anything bad in there. And then, at some point, maybe you'll be married, but this saying goes, happy wife, happy life. So if your significant other doesn't want their name on the podcast, they don't want me saying their name on the podcast, we got to listen to that rule, Zach. So that was a good executive decision on your part.
One definitely in a series of good decisions, definitely those good decisions, definitely including using Themis to help me pass the bar. And Dan, the thing that I said that made you kind of chuckle was whenever I was reading the stuff about Reggie Bush and the defamation case, I'm still fairly fresh off of studying for the bar, which was just in February, that I was sitting there thinking about defamation. It's like, oh, well, he's public figure. That means actual malice, which is something that the greatest bar prep company in the galaxy kind of exposed me to and taught me and helped me prepare for the bar. So
I think that was your attempt to change the subject, because I kept bringing up your significant other. You're smiling. I know that it was, but I won't bring it up anymore. Shout out to Themis. Shout out to Zach's mysterious significant other. Ladies, he's taken. That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know. Okay, let's close on this. The FTC announced this week, and it's not official yet, but they're going to put a ban on non-compete languages. That's going to be moving forward, and also retroactive as long as it doesn't apply to senior executives. There's a little bit of a complex test to determine what exactly is meant by a senior executive. We're not really going to discuss that here. You guys are curious how it impacts sports. I guess, people can Google this. We're not going to talk about it here. There's a DraftKings Fanatics lawsuit that's going on about non-competes. There is separately this Knicks tra this Knicks Raptors trade secrets lawsuit. I'm not going to say what side I am on in these interactions because I'd have I'm sometimes on one side, sometimes I'm on the other side, but sometimes I represent agencies and sometimes I represent agents. In those contracts, by and large, almost uniformly, there will be some language that will prevent an agent from going to a new agency and taking those clients with them. Those non-competes are, that non-compete language is everywhere. But with respect specifically to sports agents and talent agents in general, there is this language that's referred to in our space called a tail. And that means if you leave a company and you take clients with you, you're allowed, you're not allowed to take clients. But if you do take clients, and that's clients that are of the company that you worked with or prospective clients that you attempted to solicit during the 12 months prior to termination, whatever it is, that the old agency, the one that invested in you, they will get to get a percentage of your fees for a certain amount of time, 3 years, 4 years. And that is a high number. It could be a 70% tail. I was looking at an agreement recently that was a 70% tail year one, 60% year two, 50% year three. So if you're all excited to take your book of business to another agency, you get to take like 30% of that to the new agency. That concept of a tail is very restrictive in terms of people moving between agencies. At least in my practice in the legal world, lawyers will understand this well. People talk about, and I've been in the legal market, I switched firms about a year and a half ago. Everywhere that I interviewed, they asked me, "What's your book of business, Dan? What's your portable book of business?" And that meant, what clients could I take with me from firm A to firm B? This concept of a tail is not, it's foreign to the legal world. It's foreign to almost every profession. But in the agent profession, for some reason, it's just the industry standard. You can obviously try to negotiate that out of a contract. You can negotiate those percentages down, which I have a history of doing. Sometimes we get into disputes about those fees. But I am very mindful that there are a lot of people in the sports space that will either be very happy or very sad about this non-compete language because those tails will retroactively apply. And I'm not sure what an agent is. Are they a senior level executive? Probably not. Depends where they fall within the guise of the company. But a number of areas where the FTC's new language, assuming it passes, assuming or when it is published, assuming it survives appeal and whatnot, that is going to be very interesting in the sports agent space. So you could see a lot of movement very quickly, assuming this thing holds up.
Well, yeah, there's definitely going to be some a lot of movement that comes from this if it holds up. I mean, there's talk that is going to be attempt a try to an attempt to block it. So we'll see how long it's in effect before it's blocked, and then if it survives. But if it survives, you're going to see a lot of stuff moving around in the agent space, Stan. And then also, I mean, it's going to affect all sorts of other sports too. I mean, if you're leaving the front office of a baseball team and you've got a non-compete, you can't go within a certain area or to certain teams, or if it's a year off between your last day working for the Braves before you go to the Twins, that's now gone. So front offices and team presidents and GMs and things like that, as well as agents. So if it stands, really unprecedented in the way that everyone is going to move. And I think you're definitely correct in assuming there would be a lot of movement very quickly, and a lot of things that'll change as a result. I mean, if you've got the ability to move freely and immediately, and that it applies pretty much retroactively 120 days after it goes into effect, even if you had a non-compete that's now invalid, you're going to see a ton of movement.
Yeah, I mean, let's see what comes of it. I mean, it's going to have huge ramifications. Every employment agreement that I draft, and I, as people know, my as much as I do sports entertainment, I work. I'm a corporate lawyer as well, so I'm looking. We're doing a lot of deals where we have to draft employment agreements. Every employment agreement has, and every deal we do for our athletes has some form of non-compete, non-solicit, non-circumvention. That one is probably less typical, but that's our way to sometimes get around pure non-competes. So yeah, it's going to have tremendous, tremendous, tremendous ramifications. While we have about 5 minutes here, shout out to my New York Knicks, my New York Rangers. The town of New York, or the city of New York, has never been more abuzz. My daughters, listen, I'm a huge sports fan. I do not force it on my kids when I watch it. They're more than welcome to watch. I went out last Sunday with my 4-year-old to we played nine holes of golf. She rode the cart with me, my dad, and my brother. I was watching the Masters. She wants to play golf. That's tremendous. Whatever I watch, she's into him. New York is buzzing right now with the Knicks. Now she knows who Jalen Brunson is. We're watching the Rangers. She now knows who the bread man is, Artemi Panarin. So, I tell you all this to say it is very fun to be a girl dad, especially when sports are really hot in New York. So I became a huge sports fan. I was born in 88. And when I was little, the Rangers won the Stanley Cup. That's my first sports memory, celebrating the Stanley Cup, the Knicks in the playoffs. So listen, for all the little kids out there, it's important that your sports teams are good because that's the first memory kids have. So I'm loving being a girl dad right now with my two girls wanting to stay up late with me and watch the Knicks games. It's been tremendous. So Zach, you'll have that feeling at some point, but I thought coaching my girls' soccer team was like the best feeling. Now, like rooting for a sports team with your kids staying up late, putting on a my daughter has a like a retro replica Carmelo Anthony Knicks jersey. It's a good time. It's a good time. Good time in the Lust household.
Definitely sounds like a good time there, Dan. And it's definitely something that, everyone, I can remember doing stuff with my dad, going to watch John Smoltz pitch at Braves games and watching them win. And whether, it's sitting at home watching the 49ers lose in the Super Bowl with him now. Those things are really important as sports fan, as not only sports fans, but also as people. So definitely exciting that you get to do that with your two daughters, as well as being a soccer coach with them.
It's all good, Zach. Before we get kicked out of here on the Zoom, special thanks again to Themis, to you, Zach, for joining us. And we'll call it a day here. So, yeah, that'll do it for us here at Conduct Detrimental. And we'll be back next week with another fun episode. And this week, Zach, between Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I got to write two law school essay exams. No, actually, two law school multiple choice exams, which you think would be hard, with what easier than an essay exam. But the essays, you just got to write the prompts of the question. Multiple choice, you got to literally write 70, 80 questions, however many questions I do. So
Yeah, you have to
it's
come
going to
up
be a
with the
long
convincing
week,
wrong
Dan.
answers.
Oh, I'm really good at that. I'm really good at that. Okay, Zach, we'll do it here. Thanks for joining me, buddy. And yeah, we'll see you all next week on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.